Well, welcome back. Welcome back. I am so excited for our next guest and speaker. I have to tell you, I have a girl crush on this particular woman. She is a speaker and the founder of Speak Up, Speak Out Enterprises. She's an author and speaker, actually. She is, now get this, a survivor of 20 years, I'm going to say that again, 20 years of domestic violence and abuse. She has been seen and featured on NBC, ABC, HLN, Fox, and Radio 1. So she is a personality. This woman is dedicated to helping women show up as the most powerful and profitable version of themselves. Her commitment is to inspire women to take action like your life depends on it, be powerful, and be profitable. Please welcome Dr. Tamika Anderson.
Hello, Suzanne.
Hello,
thank you
my
for
dear.
That. Yes, thank you for that wonderful intro.
You are so welcome. I feel like we have had some of the best conversations since we met, and in preparation for this discussion, I just enjoy you.
Yes, and I enjoy you because it's always this magical, intense type of conversations that we have. So
yeah,
very thought-provoking.
I think we put new meaning to deep dive. We dive.
Right.
We do the deep dive.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
So as we jump into this interview, I want to start by giving you an opportunity to let everyone listening know who you are.
Okay. Well, the last time my husband held a knife to my throat, a police officer took me to the side and said, "Look here, unless you make a change, the next time we come back to your home, it's going to be to take you out of here in a body bag." And he goes, "This guy cares more about this umbrella on the floor than he does you." And sure enough, that following week, I found myself being choked, slammed, and out cold, just on the floor. My life flashed before me. And I knew at that moment I needed to make a change. But Suzanne, I never thought that I would be a victim of domestic violence. So I didn't have a plan. I didn't know what to do. And what I did is I fled in the middle of the night with my daughter thinking, oh, if I can just get to a shelter, I'll be okay. But when we got to that shelter out of state, because see, I'm the poster child for leaving more than the average six to seven times. And I would leave, come back. And the one time I left, he came and got me and literally pulled me by my ear. So I figured if I didn't flee to my home state where he could find me and drag me back, I went somewhere where I thought he would not find me. But the shelters were full, and my daughter and I ended up homeless for 2 months. And it was so hard to maneuver through the system and just trying to get through. Here I was, this woman with an education, you know, I have a doctor of science in information systems and communications, really good paying job, high paying job, had the education, the transportation, resources, and I couldn't get anywhere. It was hard. They were going to charge me with kidnapping. You know, I'm thinking, are you kidding me? You know, we were in danger. So it made me, when I came back that final time, it made me realize what's happening to the women who don't have an education or as much education or the resources or a really good income to be able to leave their abuser and stay gone. Go ahead.
So I want to just get clear so everyone is listening. So you fled out of state. So what you're saying is you didn't go back to work, right? So
I didn't know. I left everything.
So income's gone, right? Bank account, no access?
No access. No accident.
So, and I think this is one of the biggest reasons that people stay is this financial entanglement, right?
Right.
So here you are, homeless, with your daughter, sleeping in your car?
In the car, yes.
Okay. Then what?
So we ended up coming back. And I'll tell you what, one of the things that I did not know is that women of domestic violence are most likely to be murdered when they tell their abuser that they want to leave, that they're going to leave, as they're leaving and after they've gone, and when they come back. And when I came mm-hmm. back, it was 10 times worse. And so I made it up in my mind.
And when you say come back, what do you mean?
I came back to our home, back to my abuser, under the same roof. Because my money was gone. I didn't have enough money to survive on my own, to survive and thrive. The shelters were full, and the one transitional housing said that I had to be on drugs. Another said that I had to have pay stubs, 3 months worth of pay stubs. But I left my job. I left the house. I left everything behind because I was running for my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people say financial abuse is, oh, well, she's a stay-at-home mom. He makes all of the money. And so therefore, she should have had a job. Well, I had a job, and he still controlled the money. You know, he would charge up credit cards in my name only and say, well, I know as long as you have credit card debt, you'll never go anywhere. So when I came back to the home that final time, I got up the courage to file for a restraining order. And then when I filed for the restraining order, he filed for a divorce as, you know, a tit for tat type of thing,
mm-hmm.
but still continued to stalk me. And then there was financial abuse through the court system as well. So a lot of people think that domestic violence and abuse is just about the physical, but there's verbal, there's emotional, there's financial, there's even spiritual abuse, because our pastor told me to stay because we were a young couple who had accomplished a lot, and he didn't want us to give up the big house, the fancy cars, and the lifestyle. Mm. And plus, he told me I was too old to be looking for a new relationship as a woman.
We'll just come back to that in a bit. this whole series of interviews is on health, and I'm sure there's listeners going, okay, did they switch topics? Like, and we haven't, just so everybody knows. What was the impact on your physical, emotional, and spiritual health?
It was immense. Let me tell you, I was having migraine headaches. I was vomiting, nauseous all the time. During that toxic relationship, during the marriage, I was like 100 pounds overweight. And once I began to break away, I lost about 80 pounds, okay? But what happens is that we give our power away, and we give people permission to take front and center stage of our life. And because of that, I was also self-abusing. Because the abuse, the emotional abuse, was causing me to eat. And I was feeding myself through food. Food became my friend. And so it was somewhat of this self-abuse through emotional eating, finding comfort in food.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided I needed to take control of my life and get healthier.
Got it. What was your sense of self? And when I say your sense of self, I'm talking about your sense of self-worth at that time.
I started out with a healthy, what I thought was a healthy self-esteem and self-worth, but it had diminished over the years. And I didn't realize it because, as I said before, abuse is not always hostile. It's not always, you know, in a mean way. And it can be just something as simple as, oh, your makeup looks nice, but you can't really see those dark spots on your face. And it eats at you. Mm-hmm. And you begin to withdraw. You don't visit with family or friends as much. And once again, I found myself finding comfort in food. And I didn't feel good about myself. And I didn't look in the mirror because I didn't like what I saw.
So what you're talking about is the environment to which you're living in, right? Has this way of the interactions, the conversations eroding at your belief in self, your value of self, who you are. And over time, it diminishes you.
Yes. Yes, it diminishes you, and I had to realize it wasn't until I almost lost my life that I realized that just because somebody builds a prison for you doesn't mean that you have to stay in it. Mm. And I started getting out of it by taking control over what I ate, over the thoughts, you know, that I had about myself, and rejecting everything that I'd been told about myself by my abuser.
Okay.
So I had to rebuild myself from the inside out.
So let's talk a little bit about that. And you know, it's interesting because you know, I've worked in domestic violence for 10 years, right? And have managed two shelters. And you know, one of the things that's really interesting is the physical abuse stops, right? You leave, the physical abuse stops, but the emotional abuse, the spiritual abuse, the all those things, we carry that because that emotional abuse and the verbal abuse and what people say has now the person has allowed it to define them. And now it's a journey of writing a new story, a new definition of self. And most people think that, well, the abuse stopped, you leave, and you start a new life. But the abuse stops, you leave, but you carry the baggage and that definition of who you've been while you've been in that situation. So you had a 20-year erosion of who you are. And a definition that I have little to no value that you had to come back from.
That's right. That's right. And that's why now I had to retrain my brain to tell myself a different story. Mm-hmm. And that's what I share with the women that I work with. It's like, pay attention to your story conversations that you have with yourself and practice telling your story, you know, just undisputable stories of triumph. You know, you have to find the value in your story. Like, share your story, but don't get stuck in your story.
Hmm. So as you have shared your story, what are some of the biggest learnings?
What are some of the biggest
learnings?
Okay, so what I've learned from that is that I don't have to stay stuck where I am or where I was. I can change my story. I can rebuild myself. I can know. I can be my own, you know how they say sometimes you have to encourage yourself? I can be my own cheerleader. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't need someone else's validation to tell me that I'm worth it or that I'm enough.
Mm.
And so the lesson for me was realizing that I can do that for myself. I can treat me as best as I possibly can so that if someone decides they want to take away their love or walk away or walk into my life, that they, if they walk into my life, they have a high standard that they have to meet. But if they walk away from my life, it's not going to move me or shake me in a way that my life is all torn apart.
Got it.
Because I've already validated myself. They're just an addition. They don't make me complete or whole.
Mm-hmm. You know,
so it's like having...
Go ahead.
It's like having a house. You know, you have a house, the house is full and complete, but then you add that room to the back, the little sunlight room. You know, you add that sunroom. If you take it away, okay, fine. You know, I can open a window in the house and still get sunshine. You know, so it's not going to make or break anything if the person walks away.
So let's talk a little bit about self-worth for a moment, because I think it's a very interesting thing. And you're such a great example in these pieces, because oftentimes people will define their worth by what they've accomplished, right? So you're a doctor with an amazing degree, an amazing career. You probably lived in the best neighborhood with the best house, driving the best car, wearing the best clothes, right? And so all those pieces and trappings and titles and relationships, for a lot of people, they believe that that's what makes them and defines their self-worth. And what's really interesting is, in my opinion, that has nothing to do with self-worth. Self-worth, in my opinion, is the value you place on yourself when you strip yourself of all those titles. You know, I am worthy because I am. That's how I see it. I am worthy. I have great worth because I am, because I exist. I am God's child, and I'm on this planet. That's why I'm worth. I have worth, right? And that's a fundamental worth. And then, you know, I can gain a title and I can, but the one thing I know is that titles and relationships and homes and what, I can lose it in a moment. But the core value that I place on self, that is solid. It's a full cup that no one can take. And I think it's understanding the difference between the titles and the trappings and the cup that is within you that requires to be full. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes, that makes sense, Suzanne, because you can have all of the degrees, the fancy things, house, cars, clothes, and all of those, the dining, but if you don't have clear, concise boundaries to say, this is what I will and this is what I will not accept, none of that matters. It just doesn't matter. If you're suffering from the disease to please and you have all those things, it doesn't matter.
So Dr. Shamika just said, if you're suffering from the disease to please, I need to write that down. It doesn't matter. You're absolutely right. So I wanna focus a little bit on self-worth, because I think it's such a necessary topic, and you and I, you know, I have a strong focus on health and fitness, and you and I have had this conversation around rebuilding your self-worth through health and fitness, and I talk about this whole concept of filling my cup up every day. And taking the time to fill my cup up every day, and loving myself enough to stop and serve me first before I serve other people. And what are your thoughts on using, you know, health and fitness as your journey back to rebuilding self-worth?
So for me, it's, I was serving everybody from my cup, letting them take sips and gulps, and I was you know, is it running on fumes, running on empty, and serving everyone else, always there for everyone else, no alone time. But now with the health piece, I'm focusing in on filling myself up first, as we've talked about, but spending time with me. So often we're uncomfortable with spending time alone. And that alone time is where we begin to build our self-worth. Because I talk about how self-care, self-worth, self-esteem, self-confidence, it's not that it's self-serving or it's selfish. It's essential.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're not spending that time to rebuild and replenish ourselves, we're no good for anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're no good for anybody else, guess what? Our self-worth suffers. Like, we think that, oh, I'm loving unconditional, I'm running around, I'm taking care of this person, I'm wearing all these different hats, but really that's self-abuse when we're just dog tired.
Mm.
It's a form of self-abuse.
You know, and in that, I think what often is not looked at is I or you will teach people how to treat us by how we treat ourselves. Right. So when I'm able to say to someone, or I demonstrate to someone that I can run around and never have my cup poured into, and I can work till my cup is empty and often cracked, they will ensure that I do that. I will teach them that that's the relationship we have. And so this whole piece about fill your cup up first is really around ensuring that you provide the care for you first, because in that moment, you teach people how to care for you. You teach them what you will tolerate and what you will not tolerate. And it's learning to do that and learning to give only from this thing called your overflow.
That's right. That's right. Because if people see that you're not, as you said, not taking care of yourself, they're going to continue to pull and pull from you until there's nothing left.
So,
but when you say, no, I'm not available at this time, or no, I cannot do that for you, then they say, oh, well, wait a minute. I can't just call her for a ride at 2:00 in the morning, you know, just something outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because they know you have boundaries that are linked to your self-worth. Because you respect yourself enough to say, this is unacceptable.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, and I want everyone to become present to how to the simple things around this. So, you know, I watch people and they'll say to me, oh, I didn't have time to eat today. I didn't have time to drink water today. I didn't have time to exercise. I didn't have time to get enough sleep. I didn't have time. I didn't have time. I didn't have time. And what they don't really realize is they're just saying, I didn't have time to care for myself today.
Right.
And when you begin to look at that, is how many days will you go without having time to care for yourself? And there's people listening, I can guarantee you, that have gone years without having time to care. Right. Yet they want other people to respect them and care for them when they're demonstrating for the world that I don't have time to care for me. And I think I love health and nutrition because it's such a personal thing. But that personal thing teaches us to set boundaries that have us fill our cup first and give from what I call the overflow of that cup. And to do it on a daily basis, and to make it a habit. And as you do it, this is my next question: as you have begun to do it, have you watched the world change how they deal with you?
Yes, indeed. Yes, I have. You know, there are some people who will say, you know, you've really changed, and it's not so much that to them it's changed in a bad way because they can no longer call and ask for certain things, and I just say yes, you know, or I question things now. I don't just take it as face value. And I've created those boundaries to say, nope, I'm not going to do that. No, I can't do that, you know, or I'm going to do this, and that's all to it. You know, no explanations needed. And so there are some people who were used to me not having boundaries, used to me not speaking up.
Got it. I want to switch gears a little bit, and I want to talk to you about having food as your comfort, right? And as you had food as your comfort, and you developed this comfortable relationship with food. So I feel pain, I go eat. I feel sore, I go eat. I feel lonely, I go eat. Food becomes a comfort. I'm frustrated, I go eat. And you carry all that extra weight. Was that also a way of also protecting yourself?
Most definitely, because the weight was that proverbial security blanket. This is keeping me from the pain, facing the pain, facing the hurt, facing the shame and the guilt of it all. How can I let people know that he's calling me these derogatory names behind closed doors, and here I am a doctor? I can't do that. Let me just grab a cupcake. Yeah, that feels so much better. You know? So that's the way I eased my pain. But I tell you, this week has been quite interesting because I started this 30-day challenge. Mm-hmm. And with the 30-day challenge, there's no sugar, okay? So with no sugar, it made me realize, oh, my goodness, what am I going to do? I don't have that comfort food. So I had to come face-to-face with another phase of growth to say, okay, you know, like this is another phase of growth here. You know, I thought I'd gotten through some things, you know, but this whole no sugar thing, it's like, wait a minute, you took away my buddy, you took away my partner here, you know. So I had to come face to face with that. But I am excited to say, due to the 30-day challenge, I've lost 3 pounds just in my first week, because I had to let go of the sugar and come face to face with some things that I didn't realize I was still burying with my emotions, you know?
You know, it is that is so profound, because I think, you know, as people are listening, and if you're just joining, we're talking with Dr. Tanika Anderson, who has survived 20 years of domestic violence, and she's just so beautifully and candidly sharing the impact of that. And you know, so what you're saying is so profound, because I think there's people listening who they say, I'm a stress eater. That's the most common thing. I'm a stress eater. And what they actually are not aware that they might be saying is that I eat rather than feel.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Because when I eat, I don't have to deal with the feelings. I'm distracted by this thing called food, called comfort. And I'm not able to feel, and I'm not able to deal. I'm not actually facing the feelings. And what you're saying is, as you got started this 30-day challenge, and your comfort, your creatures of comfort have been kind of let go and told, you know, roam free, go hang out in someone else's house, but not mine. You are left face to face with emotion.
Yes. Face to face with emotions, but also colliding with the fact that I had totally just, okay, I realized that I had given up my freedom to choose. You know, that's what this week has taught me. I had given up my freedom to live, my freedom to be loved, my freedoms to be happy, you know, and it also made me realize the ultimate was I had given up the freedom to be financially fit and physically fit because I was feeding my emotions with food based on all those stressors and all the traumatic experiences that I had gone through over the years.
You know, I thank you so much for what you're sharing, because I think you're giving every listener a gift right now. And what you know, what's really interesting about this cycle that you're talking about. So an event happens, a simple event. It pops up an emotion, right? The emotion's not a comfortable one, right? So it's a painful one, and or it's one that frustrates us. The coping mechanism is, you know what? Let's go get my favorite brownie, my favorite piece of cake. For me, it used to be bread and hot bread and butter, right? Let me just go sit and just indulge. Now I'm distracted from the emotion, but what I also miss is the opportunity to have this to face it, deal, and find the solution that can actually move me from a situation that's not working, right?
That's right.
And so in this cycle, we perpetuate a circumstance by avoiding it through food, right, versus facing it, interrupting, and actually having an opportunity to feel, deal, and find that solution. And that is why many people are just stuck.
And Suzanne, the reason why I relied so much, and I keep saying cupcakes because those are my weakness, right? Is because I mentioned earlier, I got the courage to file for a restraining order. He filed for a divorce, and people were telling me, oh, you know, a divorce is like death. It's the worst thing. And I'm like, you don't say, okay? But a couple of months into this divorce, he drops dead. And I'm actually face to face with dealing with the death. So even though all these things are going on, I still loved him. So I have all these different emotions going on, and it's like I'm grieving. I'm kind of relieved because it's like, okay, he can't kill me now. But it's like, okay, I need to go and get these cupcakes because I need to feel better. I can't think about this right now because I don't know how to process it, because they said divorce is worse than death, and now I'm face-to-face with it. What do I do? Grab another cupcake and another 10 pounds. Grab another cupcake and another 20 pounds. And I just kept packing it on. On top of everything else throughout the years.
So what had
and
it
finally,
stopped?
What's that?
What had it stopped? What created the shift where you're like, you know what? I need to do something different.
I got on that scale, Suzanne, and it said the TV show 227. And I said, uh-oh, that's enough. I am 227 pounds. And I had to ask myself, wait a minute, are you showing up as the most powerful and profitable version of yourself? And the reason why is because I turned down promotions because he didn't want me to take promotions. I didn't tell people that I was a doctor because he didn't want everybody to know because it would make him look bad. And I finally had to check myself. I had to check myself. And that was my aha moment.
Okay.
That was my aha moment.
And you know, when I introduced you, you talked about speaking up, finding your voice, right? And it sounds like that was the moment you found your voice.
Yes, yes. That was the moment that I found my voice. That was the moment that I said, you know what? I have to help other women.
Mm. And so therefore you choose to become the model, the role model.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yes,
okay.
Because the pain of it all, because see, that pain affects your health in a way, as I said before, migraine headaches, arthritis, you know, not being nauseous and vomiting and all sorts of gastrointestinal issues that can go on and affect your health in a way that, you know, it can be very harmful if you don't get it under control.
Mm. Now, I love what you're saying, and oh my goodness, this is so powerful. So when you're talking about finding your voice, you're not just talking about letting the world know that you actually have you actually are a doctor, right? Right.
No.
You're not just talking about, you're not letting the world know that, yes, I'm able to take these offers, right? And I can go on CNN and I can go on Fox. You're not just talking about that. You're talking about finding your voice in how you live your day. So showing up for yourself and eating properly, showing up for yourself and exercising, showing up for yourself and getting enough rest. You're talking about finding your voice in how you are in the world, and that you're talking about finding a beingness that you can be proud of, that is in alignment
right.
with who you want to be in the world.
That's right. I'm not talking about the degrees or how many letters you have behind your name or how many years you've been in your current profession. It's really talking about having the courage to show up, to step out there, share your story, get healthy, get fit, and live a meaningful and purposeful life that you can step into your power and be profitable with it at the same time. It's all about being the best version of yourself.
Mm. My word, you know, meeting the best version of yourself every single day. And I really want to highlight what you're saying, because I really want everyone listening to get what you're saying. Because you're truly saying, you know, when people say find our voice, we think of speaking, right? We think of the words that come out of our mouth. Most people think that that's what you mean by find your voice. And that's a piece of it. But what you're actually saying when you say find your voice is you're saying that make sure that everything you do is in alignment with who you desire to be. So you're talking about finding your voice in a very different way than most people will probably accustomed to hearing it, right? And what I have learned over time is people care very little about what I say, right? What I say only has value with when what I do lines up with what I say.
That's right. And how you make them feel.
Mm-hmm.
How you can deliver to serve them to also have a voice.
Absolutely. And how I can deliver to serve them, if it's authentic, there's no contradiction. That's really what you're saying.
That's right. That's right. It all has to be in alignment. It all has
Wow.
to be in alignment, because I tell you what, it will smell worse than a dirty diaper. If someone sees you, they can automatically realize that you're living a watered down version of yourself.
Wow. That's deep. And you know, what you're sharing today, I think is such a gift, such a gift. So thank you. What's next for Dr. Tamika?
What's next for me? I am focused on becoming the healthiest version of myself from the inside out. I am helping women tell their stories in a powerful and profitable way because we all have a story to tell. And so we focus on finding the value in that story and how to strategically position the story so that we're showing up as the best version of who we are. And so that's what I am focused on right now, just speaking and doing the live broadcast.
Cool. And why is the health component so important?
Because I have to be healthy and fit so that my cup is full to be able to serve others. They have to see that I am taking care of me first.
Awesome. And I think it lends to such a beautiful habit, right? I know that when I'm overwhelmed and scattered is usually when I let my self-care go, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I'm grounded and solid is when I care for me first, and everything stems from that. And so what's also really powerful is the habit of self-care translates energetically, I believe, into my money, into my relationships, into my recreation and travel, into my creativity. That habit creates a strength, an energy, a vitality that translates into everything else and makes everything else a little easier and sometimes a lot easier.
And it's a domino effect as the confidence builds with your health, with your inner self, with your finances. Everything, every aspect of your life begins to increase.
Absolutely.
Self-worth, self-confidence, self-esteem, all of that begins to increase because you're now at one with yourself. That self-respect. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that self-respect is so crucial. And when I teach and I teach a course all on mindset around this thing called health and fitness and wellness. And I often say to students when they come in is that I or you will never take care of that which we do not love, honor, and respect, right?
Mm.
And that the act of self-care on a daily basis is the act of self-respect, self-love, and self-honoring. I also truly believe that I cannot take care of what I am disconnected from, right? And when people put their health on the back burner, when people do all these different things, it is a form of disconnection, right? And so you'll see people, they're surprised that when they put on their suit that it doesn't fit anymore. They're surprised that when they put on their dress that it's too tight and they're like, how did I get here? You got there because you were disconnected to self. And when you are disconnected to self, you dishonor self. And everyone else around you has a bigger opportunity to dishonor self. You're disconnected from your needs. You're disconnected from a sense of value. You're disconnected from a sense of self-worth. You haven't stopped, as you said earlier, you haven't stopped to spend time with self because you're disconnected, because you're busy serving the world and not serving self. So I think when you're saying, I am taking on my health, what you're truly saying is I'm staying grounded in self. I'm staying respectful of self. I'm staying honoring of self. That is so good.
Yes. That's powerful. That's powerful. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, anything you want to say that I didn't ask you Because I know you got lots. You got lots. We talked. You and I could roll for hours.
Yes, we can. Well, I just want to make sure that those listening out there, that just take time to ask yourself, when did you stop giving yourself permission to live your own story and not the one that someone else has written for you? Because when we allow someone else to write our story, that's when the stress kicks in. That's when we experience trauma. And that's when we go for the foods that we shouldn't be putting into our body. That's what causes the stress hormone levels to create, you know, fat cells to stay that should really dissolve and go away. But we hold on to that fat just because of the stressors that our body is experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
So when we decrease those stress levels, we see a decrease in that number on the scale. We see a decrease in the health problems that we experience.
Wow. So I'm sure that there are people, particularly women, that are like, where can I find and meet this amazing woman? So where can they connect with you, Dr. Tamika?
They can connect with me by going to www.tamikaanderson.com. And I also have a free gift to give to those who want to connect with me. It's like that warm cookie that comes out of the oven. But see, this is a healthy cookie. But it is, it's if they just text the word THRIVE to 412-201-0224. Again, that number is 412-201-0224. If you text the word THRIVE, you'll get a free gift directly from me. But my website is www.tamikaanderson.com, or they can follow me on social media. I'm on all social media platforms as @ Dr. Tamika Works.
We have been speaking with Dr. Tamika Anderson. Dr. Tamika, thank you so much for blessing us today. And as usual, I so enjoy spending time with you.
Thank you, Suzanne. And it has truly been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure.
It has. Thank you.